Welcome to the Pop Culture Cosmos.
And we're back with the Pop Culture Cosmos. It's Gerald Glassford coming right back at you here from Pop Culture Cosmos. Inside Sports, Fantasy Football, Game Source, and the Lakers Fast Break. We truly appreciate everyone out there catching all of our great shows. And if you can, please give us that 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Plus, if you can like, share, subscribe today to get the latest notifications on when we go live on the air with the latest state of pro wrestling, like we just did with our WrestleMania previews, which for the most part are turning out okay. Plus also as well, of course, we come at you with the PCC Multiverse. We have great interviews. Plus, of course, every time that we come at you with the Pop Culture Cosmos. But it wouldn't be a Pop Culture Cosmos without my good friend. He is the evil mastermind. He is the zookeeper of Happy Hoarder Collectibles. Please go ahead and check out what he's doing today at the Happy Hoarder Collectibles for your collectible needs. HappyHoarderCollectibles.com. It is Josh the Great Peterson. Josh, great to have you here as always, my friend. While you were waiting for me, you were just basically cleaning up after your time at the zoo.
Yes. Yeah. So we did a comic convention at the zoo. And as I was telling you before the show, that it was more of a, I don't know, it felt more like a swap meet. I mean, it was still great. It was good. Like, you know, it's fun having people walk in, talk to you and all that. But there's only like a couple, probably like 3 comic / collectible vendors. And everyone else is kind of selling like necklaces and candies and like little toys for kids and things like that. So it was interesting. Like I don't regret doing it. And the people who organize it, they do like the Central Texas Comic Con. I forget exactly what organization they're with, but really nice people. So it was a good time. It was a good time. So they're thinking about the event will be bigger next year. So that'll be cool. But yeah, I don't know. I was sitting here totaling up all the numbers, seeing what the weekend looked like. But how are you doing, man? I hear that you have some dinner in the wings here tonight.
Yeah. As I told you, my friend, having teenagers in the house, teenage metabolism equals more food that you have to go on food runs to get. And that does take a little bit of time. So I do apologize for the delay getting on the air. But I do want to mention that Godzilla X Kong, the new empire, is the king of the box office once again, defeating clearly anybody else, domestic and worldwide box office for this period of time. 31 million. Its tally is now over 100 million domestically and is on its way to another great showing. So the Godzilla, as we talked about on last week's show, is going to be more Godzilla, my friend, more Godzilla. Monkey Man from Dev Patel, and hopefully I get Himanish Goel, our resident expert on Bollywood. Hopefully he can get me a little bit more in tune to this. This was the Jordan Peele executive produced Monkey Man. He liked the project early on and he jumped right on it. And Monkey Man did about 10 million at the box office.
Ghostbusters. It looks really good. I'm sorry. I know before. Yeah. It looks like a really great film.
It does. Very action oriented. So I'm hoping that even if this movie does not do gangbusters, I'm hoping this will give Dev Patel a higher spotlight. And hopefully, again, I will be able to speak to our good friend Himanish Goel, our resident Indian and Bollywood expert, to go ahead and elaborate more on that. But Ghostbusters, The First Omen, I really feel bad for Josh because they didn't give critics the chance to view this until just before release, which usually means the death knell, my friend, which usually means it's bad, whether it's in video games or movies. But the reviews are mostly positive. And I think there was a mistake by Disney and 20th Century Fox in not getting this out more as far as the word out before this movie release, because it looks like it's going to be I won't say a bomb because it only costs $30 million to make, Josh, but I'm telling you, it's not going to make the money that I think it could have with The First Omen.
Yeah, I remember we talked about this on Facing the Franchise, how they're cheap to make and they still get returns, you know, like as long as they can surpass that 30 million mark, or was it 130 million? I don't remember exactly.
Well, this one, all it needed to make was like, but maybe $70-80 million. And then you're talking about in the black from there.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like we said before, be foolish not to keep making these. Yeah, but you are right. It's a shame that the movie didn't get out sooner for review copies. But also, like, I see why people are hesitant to put out reviews, or sorry, early copies for review of their films, because like the critics, like they can make or break a film. And I know we've talked about this before, but like they have far too much power over what happens to movies.
This is true, my friend. But it is Josh Peterson and me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks so much again for watching and listening. Again, congratulations to Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, for winning this weekend at the box office. But we've got a lot to talk about, including facing the franchise once again on something that we didn't expect to face the franchise. Well, we expected to get around to eventually, but we thought it would be an epitaph, Josh. But in a little bit, we'll be talking about The Matrix coming back alive with the news that a new Matrix is in development without the Wachowskis as the main driving force in it. They'll be executive producing, but at least Lana Wachowski will be. But we'll go ahead and talk about, is there still some life left in the Matrix? We'll go ahead and talk about that coming up on the show. Plus, we'll be talking about Fallout. Fallout is something we're going to be talking about because that's going to be the next big series on Amazon Prime. So we'll definitely be talking about that coming up here in a few minutes as far as our relation to the video game scene and what the hopes are for Josh, who's a resident Fallout fan on that. Plus, we'll be talking about Tokyo Vice, Three Body Problem, Invincible Season 2, and more. So go ahead and stay with us right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. But first, my friend, I thought I would give you plenty of time because I'm driving my happy butt down the road. I suddenly get this call in the middle of the week from Josh Peterson. And I know that Josh either has a great idea or a great complaint. It's either not just catching up. No. It's either, when he calls me in the middle of the week, it's either a great idea or a great complaint. And this time it was a great complaint. I got a rant going on. I feel it coming out, Gerald. So I'm like, okay, what's going on? Yeah, so basically, Marvel, in its preparation to get the Fantastic Four movie underway for release next year, has decided, and according to reports, decided on a new Silver Surfer. And, you know, those that are familiar with the Silver Surfer character, it's been predominantly throughout the course of time categorized more as a male. There has been sometimes in alternate universes and alternate versions point out as a female. So Marvel, in their casting choice for Silver Surfer, casted Julia Garner for the next Fantastic Four movie. And Josh was absolutely livid. But I said, I thought about it for a little while. And I said to Josh, I saw a video, whatnot, that kind of got me thinking, in the multiverse concept, there are alternate versions of every single superhero character that's out there. So go ahead, Josh. The floor is yours. Before I retort either which way, because I either agree or disagree, I'll just share my thoughts here at the back end. But I want you to go ahead and vent away on whether this is a main 616 universe or an alternate universe. Regardless, it is for the next Fantastic Four movie, The Silver Surfer, and of course, playing it is Julia Gardner.
All right, let me preface this rant by saying I have nothing against the fact that they're casting it as a female, right? Like the gender of the character, I'm not anti-girl characters at all, okay? I love Julia Gardner, love what she did in Ozark. She's a very
really good actress.
Yeah. What's irritating to me is the fact that this is a character that everyone has waited so long to see. You know, everyone has waited for a very, very long time. Like in Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, they didn't really do the character justice. You know, they kind of, it was cool to watch, but they didn't really delve into exactly like what makes the Silver Surfer such an amazing character. I mean, and the Norrin Rad version is the one that I'm talking about here, because he's such a layered character. There's so much, symbolism within his story arcs, whether it's religious, theological. He's a very layered and complex character, and that's the character that not just me, but I'm sure a lot of people out there were waiting to see. This one that's coming out is the Shala Ball version, and she, yes, in a different universe, she was Silver Surfer for a very brief moment in time, right? But here's the thing. You know, we talked about Guardians of the Galaxy. We talked about this with the Eternals. With these characters that are not super well known to the mainstream audience, you only get one shot to basically introduce this character and make them interesting. And I fear that by not doing, and I get, you know, you showed me that video, the whole multiverse concept and this Fantastic Four, which is interesting because this Fantastic Four takes place in what, the 60s?
Yes, it does take place in the 60s. It is an older Fantastic Four, and so it also leads to believe that it could be set, Josh, in an alternate universe, which may predicate the reasoning why they have a female cast as a Silver Surfer.
Yeah, and that's fine, but it seems weird that they wouldn't introduce the Norrin Rad Silver Surfer before doing this.
Maybe that's their intent for longer term planning, is to introduce that version of the character long term.
Yeah, it seems, I don't know, this is going to sound bad, but it seems questionable with like Disney really pushing heroes to the forefront that don't necessarily need to be there. And that's what really worries me, is that they're going to really push to have this like female Silver Surfer, whatever, be front and center. And then it's going to ruin whatever Norrin, you know, whatever effect that the character of Norrin Rad would have if it was later on introduced. I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is that people have been waiting for the Norrin Rad Silver Surfer. So this came out of left field, and it was just kind of irritating because that's the character I want to see. Nothing against Julia Garner or the Shala Ball Silver Surfer, but this is the one. Like, if you're going to introduce Silver Surfer and have it be awesome, like, this is the one. This is the one. You want the Norrin Rad one. I don't know why they want to go so way, way out there with that.
Well, the thing I ask you then in retort is that you've already been introduced to a Reed Richards in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. With John Krasinski, the fan favorite, you know, a lot of people already had him, you know, for years they wanted John Krasinski as Reed Richards. So you did get to see for about 10 minutes, a Reed Richards in as you know, a part of the multi-cinematic universe. And with the Marvel universe therein, you got to see him. You got to see him unfortunately die at the hands of Scarlet Witch and all that. But you're bringing back Pedro Pascal as another version of Reed Richards. And if it's in an alternate universe, we may not have even yet seen the 616 version of Reed Richards. So it gets a lot of people confused, and I'm sure that's the thing that they're going to have to clear up. I'm worried more about storytelling. If the story isn't good, whatever characters they surround it with, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if it's female or male, because we've seen over the course of the time with MCU in recent films, the Marvels had a terrible story attached to it. Now everybody's going to be saying, oh, it's because it's a girls film. No, it's because the story sucked. It's one of the worst Marvel films ever because the story absolutely sucked. Not whoever was in it. It's just about the story being absolutely terrible. Why is Avengers Endgame and Avengers Infinity War, why are those films so good? It's because the story surrounding it was laid out a whole lot better. And just to me, it doesn't matter to me as far as who gets cast where. It just matters is the writing and the storytelling and the direction up to snuff. And if when it's not, like we've seen recently with the Marvels and other projects, Secret Invasion, they totally ruined a lot of characters in there, including really hurting Nick Fury. I mean, when it goes bad, it doesn't matter which sex of which character it is.
So here, that's kind of, I guess, what I'm trying to say is with the female characters, they're cool. But yeah, with you mentioned with the Marvels, even like Captain Marvel, there are elements of Black Widow that did this. The Disney is so obsessed with these female characters and pushing them towards the front of everything that they completely give up on. They cast aside storytelling. They cast aside character development because all they care is about pushing these female characters forward, selling toys and merchandise to little girls. And they don't something gets lost, the narrative threads get tangled and or they get cut completely, and it ruins it. So with the Silver Surfer having this Shala Ball character, I feel like that's the whole character that is the Silver Surfer is going to get lost. And when they're done with this, and then, you know, like you said, if they in the future they want to introduce Norrin Rad, it has the high probability of making it so people don't care, and that's what concerns me.
Well, again, I just want the story to be good. I don't care who plays what character. I'm just hoping for the story to be good. If the story is not good, then and the results aren't there, then yeah, it's going to be a field day for everybody to roast why Silver Surfer was this way and whatnot. But if the Silver Surfer was a male and the story was bad, it makes no difference to me, because it's all about the storytelling. And if the storytelling is not good, as it hasn't been for the most part in the past 2 to 3 years for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that to me is a bigger problem, as far as not who they cast for the characters, it's what they give those characters as far as material to work with.
Yeah. So here's another concern that I'm having is, this is a multiverse Fantastic Four. So what are they going to do? Make another movie called Fantastic Four 2 based on like the 616 Fantastic Four? And if that's the case, they'll already have met the Silver Surfer. So the impactfulness of Norrin Rad's backstory on Reed Richards and Sue Richards is not going to be anywhere near the same, because they'll be like, oh, we've already seen one of you before, except they had long hair and they're a woman.
Well, I think it's Secret Wars when it comes right down to it. What is the plan for Secret Wars? And you know, when it comes down to it, the next big Avengers movie, the next big deal is when they get to it, what is their end goal for that? So, or their end game, pardon the pun, for that.
Yeah, I just like, I feel like, I don't know, that this isn't going to work out so well. And that kind of worries me, because everyone's just trying to ride the high, get back on that high that the Thanos arcs had. And it's just, this is not, so far it is not going well. And I am concerned, you know, especially with this iteration of the Silver Surfer, that they are pandering to an audience instead of really exploring the depths of what their characters have to offer.
Well, we'll see, my friend. Again, if it's a good movie, then it shouldn't be any problem with it. But we'll see if it actually is going to be something worth watching. But again, it is the Silver Surfer, has been cast. Julie Garner, fantastic actress. And then hopefully she does well in the role. I'm hoping that when the movie comes out, and if the movie does well, I think Josh would be the first person to say, you know what, I was wrong. If it does well and it tells a good story and he enjoys the movie, I'm hoping Josh will get the opportunity to say just that.
Yeah.
I always love to say when I'm wrong, and it benefits you, the viewer out there.
Hey, I'm happy to say that I'm wrong, but I mean, we've been saying that with literally every Marvel movie that has come out since Endgame, and it's none of them. We have not gone back on any of them.
Shang-Chi, we liked.
We did enjoy that one. But yeah, I mean, most of the other Marvel things have not been fantastic.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
I think that should be a pun intended right there for you. But what are your thoughts out there on the upcoming Fantastic Four? Please let us know your thoughts on the casting of Silver Surfer and everything surrounding Fantastic Four. Please let us know your thoughts, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com. For the latest news and information, analysis and opinions on the Los Angeles Lakers and the NBA, check out the Lakers Fast Break podcast today on wherever you get your podcasts. Well, there's still much more to talk about on today's show. It is Josh Peterson along with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks again for watching, listening. Truly appreciate it. Invincible Season 2, talking about Amazon. We'll be talking about Amazon here for a little bit. But Invincible Season 2 just ended with another climactic battle. It's another interesting tit-for-tat as far as it's concerned. I do want to go ahead and ask you, Josh, I don't know if you've stayed with Invincible, but this season, it's kind of scattershot. It decided to go ahead and do some really hard storytelling, hard stop storytelling. And I say this as far as it'll tell you a story for one character or Invincible himself. Then it'll do a hard stop and just goes completely in a different direction for another set of characters. And then wants you to come back and pick it up later in the show and vice versa and whatnot. And then it'll just forget about some storylines for about an episode or two and expect you to remember it. I was kind of scattershot in that sense. So I didn't like it as much as the first season, which a lot of people were really high on. So I thought it was okay for what it was. Your thoughts, my friend, though, on Invincible.
Hey, so this is a weird one for me because I actually really enjoyed the first few episodes that I watched, but I just have not had a chance to go back to it and finish it.
I thought it was okay overall, but it's just all over the place.
Okay.
All over the place for me as far as the storytelling.
Right. So that's what I'm hearing. Like, it's very disjointed, but also everyone's saying that the episode they just showed with alluding to like Spider-Man and their crossover with Batman was actually
it's like a minute.
It's funny because apparently they didn't consult Marvel on any of this stuff. The Amazon lawyers were like tweaking every little tiny thing just to make sure that didn't cross any copyrights, but everyone's saying that
it got there, but it didn't cross over.
But and if you don't, you know, in the audience, in case you don't know, like the comic books cross over quite a bit with these other properties.
But the Batman one was even one I would think they would be more nervous on than, to me, the Marvel one, as far as that's concerned. The Batman, it was the way it was. Stephen Young had to make sure he phrased that correctly to avoid any trouble. And what you saw out of the cape got you in the right direction, but didn't get you all the way, as far as that's concerned. So
it was more for like connotation. Like see a certain thing, you're like, oh, okay, I know who that is.
And the creator's trying to tell you, oh, but it wasn't Gotham City, so it wasn't bad. No, we know what you were trying to allude there. Don't tell us that. Yeah, come on. Again, very disjointed storytelling. But still, when it does focus in on what to focus in on, it is really hard. It is really heart-wrenching and really, really emotional. But my credit to Stephen Young, that character, the way he is voicing it is absolutely sensational. Sandra Oh is great. J.K. Simmons is great. Yeah, the cast of top-line actors in this, even doing just cameos, is absolutely outstanding. So, yeah, I mean, it was okay. First season is much better. But this was okay. It's still a decent watch. It is, of course, Invincible Season 2. So please go ahead and check out what they're doing today on Amazon Prime. And before we hit the break, speaking of Amazon Prime, their big series coming up this week, Josh, with one series down, another pops in, something brand new, something you're familiar with. So the man behind much of what we know about Fallout on this show. We haven't talked about Fallout in a long time since the failure and resurrection attempts by Fallout 76 to become relevant after its really terrible rollout has now come in and revolved into a television series that's coming to Amazon Prime. So your thoughts on what Fallout is and what Fallout should be to you coming on the big screen.
You know, I haven't really put a lot of thought into the Fallout TV show. Like, it looks cool. I've seen the pictures, and they're already doing merchandise for it. Like, I was on my distributor's website, and they already have, like, Fallout action figures coming out by McFarlane. So, if you're interested in that, you know, you can find those online. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, the Fallout, to me, it's the sense of mystery you get while playing it, and also, like, a feeling of dread. Like, I remember playing Fallout 3. Remember, I had Liam Neeson did the voice. I think the voice of the dad, if I remember correctly. But all that stuff happens, and you come out of the vault, and all of a sudden you see this like wasteland in front of you, and you get this feeling of excitement, dread, terror, all of it all at once, because you don't know what's waiting for you right outside. So until you do all this exploration, that's it slowly builds on you. Slowly get used to all the stuff outside. You run into like the what do you call them, the mutant guys, and then you have the raiders or whatever. But I don't know. It's hard. In my mind, this will be it's a hard show to adapt and stay faithful to the video game continuity without creating side stories with or subplots within that world that are more geared towards a TV audience. So I don't really have any expectations for the show right now. I'm just kind of waiting to see what happens. Either it's going to be good or it's not going to be good. But also they have to make this they have to make it good because they picked up a few other video game properties. I think Horizon is one that they're working on next, or that I think it's Horizon or God of War, one of the two is owned by Amazon. And if they want people to like really give these shows a try, like they're gonna have to do well on this first one coming out the door.
Two words, my friend, as you always know, I will say when it comes to any type of adaptation that could be done. Mass Effect.
Oh my gosh. One day, man, one day we are going to get that, and it's going to hopefully be amazing. But I think that all of their money is going into Warhammer, so I wonder if that's going to keep Amazon from touching the Mass Effect property. I think Max would be a good place for it, though.
I remember what was about 2-3 years ago, we reported on the rumors that Mass Effect was being circled by Amazon as a possible property. I mean, Henry Cavill was reading
script. Yeah,
the synopsis right there for you. Yes. So when you go ahead and hopefully, you know, come up to my grave in about 30, 40 years, my friend, and you come up to grave and tell me that project is finally underway, just make sure you, Gerald, rest in peace, my friend. They finally did it, man. They finally did it. Thank you.
It's happening. Yeah, yes. You know what you need? A screen in the top of your coffin and a USB stick that like comes up and I could plug it into it.
There you go. Absolutely.
Just, yeah.
Right there. It's a skeleton.
Yeah.
But it is, of course... It is, of course, Fallout, my friend. I'm hearing the advanced word. It might be pretty good, but we'll see. Of course, we'll get a bird's eye view of it. I'm not the biggest fan. I've just played Fallout New Vegas. It's the one I've really only spent any real time in. I've spent a little time of Fallout 3 and Fallout 4, but Fallout New Vegas is the only one that actually got any hooks into me. So we'll see, my friend, if they go ahead and spend some time in the world of Fallout and if it's worth it. But it is coming up here later this week. It is Fallout on Amazon Prime. So hopefully you will be able to catch it when all the episodes hit upcoming here in the not too distant future on Amazon Prime. But we'd love to hear your thoughts on Fallout. What are your thoughts on Fallout? Are you excited for a Fallout series on Amazon Prime? Please let us know your thoughts. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
What is Planet Cool Stuff? It's your ultimate destination for insightful exploration from the realm of pop culture. Delve into the world of movies, video games, toys, cartoons, and visit with one-of-a-kind creators, discover incredible places, and see historical artifacts. Whether it's a toy room tour or exploring the best of pop culture cinema, Planet Cool Stuff has got you covered. Planet Cool Stuff, exclusively on Jinx Esports TV Canada.
But my friend, we've got more to talk about. 1/2 hour down, 1/2 hour to go here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. It is Josh the Great Peterson from Happy Hoarder Collectibles, along with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks so much for watching, listening. Truly appreciate it. Before we get into Tokyo Vice, once again, and I will lavish the praises of Tokyo Vice once again, I also want to go ahead and make sure that you get up to date. And I know you talked about a world record that was done by a popular property here too, here in a minute. We'll talk about that. Make sure we touch on that before we head on out. Three Body Problem on Netflix, which is still garnering huge ratings on Netflix. It looks like it is going to become the next big property from Netflix. So we'll see what if it continues its success, but you have had a chance to catch up with me on Three Body Problem. I already spoke at length with Melinda about it in regards to my feelings and thoughts on it. I've also spoken to Don Fobbs about it. And I've also spoken to Jeff Sloboda from the MCU's Bleeding Edge on it. So your thoughts, my friend, do you have a problem with Three Body Problem?
I have three problems with it, actually. I'm just kidding. No. So I'm one episode in, so you take what I say with a grain of salt, because I might not even be getting to the, I'm not even near the tip of the iceberg yet, but I'm intrigued. I turned it on, and my wife, we were sitting there watching, and she falls asleep during literally everything we watch, but you know, she sits there and she was like, I don't want to, because it starts out in
China.
Yeah, communist China. Yeah, and they have the you see the dad is being, you know, paraded around on stage. He's talking about the origins of the universe. Anyways, you know, I had the subtitles, and you know, my wife's like, I'm too tired to read subtitles, and she fell asleep. So, but I sat there and watched it, and I'm like, wow, this, like, the cultural part of it really, like, creates this weird sense of intrigue for the opening of the show, because I'm like, I don't even know what this show is about. I just see this happening, but I want to watch more. So I sat there watching it, and it just got, the hooks went deeper and deeper, and I want to know more. And the cast is so good, and they just do such a great job of, like, mixing the past and the present together. Like, it doesn't feel like it's jolting you out of the story that they're trying to tell. It all kind of just, like, feeds into each other organically, and I've never seen a show do that before. But also, like, these are the same guys that brought Game of Thrones to life, which, you know, in the books, it does the same exact thing when it jumps around from character to character. So no wonder they're able to do it so well. But yeah, I'm on the ride, and I'm ready to definitely check out the rest of it.
I liked it. As I said, I liked it a lot. I'm not going to say it was great, because I think there was the special effects on the back end of the series. I think you may wince a little bit, and I'll just leave it at that. But otherwise, it does tell a good narrative. It does get a little bit over the head to its audience at times, because of, you know, almost like Star Trek. Star Trek sometimes talks over its audience with all the inner workings as far as everything going on. And this one has a tendency to do that a little bit as well. But when it comes right down to it, when it's dealing as a mystery theater, you know, as far as a real, true mystery, intrigue, international, whole nine yards, when it deals with that aspect of it, Josh, that's when it's at its best. When, especially, you know, when you see Wong, he is terrific in this show. Just Benedict Wong is just absolutely fantastic on the show. Rosalind Chow is just absolutely fantastic on the show. Just, yeah, you're right. The whole cast is absolutely great. But when it deals with the intrigue of actually what's going on and the bigger picture and how they put the pieces together to find out the bigger picture, my friend, that's when this series really gets good. And that's when I think you'll really start to enjoy it.
Well, even in the first episode, it's not like one of those shows where they want to prove how smart the show is by just, like, speaking science and lore constantly. This show, they explain a little bit, but they show you. And that's an element that you don't see a whole lot. So you don't have to be super smart to grasp it. And you don't have to like have any knowledge of that field of science. You just sit there and watch it unfold, and then things slowly start to make sense. And granted, again, I'm only on episode one, but I'm really looking forward to watching the rest of this show.
I really want to hear your thoughts on it when you finish it up, but we want to hear your thoughts continuously on Three Body Problem. I've heard a lot of good vibes out there for Three Body Problem. So if you've caught Three Body Problem or you're watching it now, please let us know your thoughts. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. But we also wanted to go ahead and touch on some other things here on the show. So that included Tokyo Vice Season 2. And Josh, I labeled this the best show on television you're not watching. And they closed out the season 2, with absolutely no idea if they're going to go ahead and get a green light. If it does get canceled, I won't be surprised, Josh, because this has been criminally under-advertised because of how good this show is. The access to the areas of Japan that they've gotten and been able to know, there's great stories behind it, because the Yakuza, the real life Yakuza, that the, you know, not the Yakuza in the story that they're trying to translate, but the real life Yakuza, they had to go ahead and, you know, try to appease and try to not piss them off and things of that nature in order to go to the areas and get the kind of access that rarely any television show or movie gets of Tokyo in that world. So I really hope, Josh, that after you go to your three body problem, you go and give Tokyo Vice on Max a shot in season two, because it is really, really worth your time.
Yeah, that's another one I keep wanting to watch. I keep forgetting that I want to watch it. So yes, I will definitely check this out. This reminds me though of Sons of Anarchy, I feel, was a highly overrated show. You know, I know it had its fans, people loved it, but it's kind of the same thing though. Like, they had to actually ask biker gangs, like, they did a lot of research using biker gangs to make the show feel authentic. So that's kind of reminds me of what you're talking about with Tokyo Vice. But yeah, it's definitely it's on my list. I want to watch it. I still haven't watched the first season, but I promise I will before the holiday season gets here.
Okay, fair enough. It does tell the story, just to get everybody up to speed, about, it's actually based on a real life story. In fact, the guy who is the head of this, as far as Ansel, his story, the character he's playing, is an actual individual that was a American that traveled overseas and went to become a reporter for one of Tokyo's biggest newspapers to investigate a whole bunch of different things, crime, corruption, but basically the underworld of Tokyo. And he goes depths, and it's basically an ensemble cast that deals with all various aspects, from the good cops to the crooked cops, to the actual inner workings of the Yakuza and the different gangs itself, to the the different sides of the actual places and culture of Tokyo, and how intertwined they are, and also the level of which gaijins, or foreigners from outside the country, what kind of access and what kind of access they do and do not have in that country, and what the perspectives and how they are treated. So you get all those views and how the way it is in Tokyo and in Japan as a whole. And I'm telling you what, it is definitely an education, and it's definitely worth watching. So yes, if you get a chance, please, it's available on Max now. Please support it by watching season one and two. It is Tokyo Vice. I highly, highly recommend it. And I can already tell you, it will be very high in my best of pop culture for 2024, because I think season two, unlike Invincible, season two was much better. I don't say much better, because season one was really good. It was on my best of pop culture. Season two was even better than season one. And that, to me, is really a show heading in the right direction, Josh.
Yeah, and that's usually pretty hard to pull off too, because everyone rides that high and they're like, are they going to outdo themselves? So good for them.
I'm worried about Severance coming out later this year on Apple TV Plus, because I talked to you about how Severance was the best show that I've seen, the best season of television I've seen probably this century. And I don't know how they're going to be able to top that. I really don't. But when that comes out later this year, we will find out and we will see. But it is Tokyo Vice season two. Please, if you can, if you're looking for something to get into, I think you should go ahead and check out Tokyo Vice on Max. Please go ahead and let us know your thoughts, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com. Before we get to the break, my friend, I want to go ahead and hear your thoughts on a world record that recently happened that earned a spot from a very, very famous anime IP. So go ahead, my friend, let us know your thoughts on Jujutsu Kaisen earning a spot in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Yeah, so it won a spot as the most popular anime of all time. And there's some kind of like program they use to track all the, the people searching it and the merchandise being bought and all that. And it discovered that this Jujutsu Kaisen has actually outdone Dragon Ball and One Piece and all the other, and Attack on Titan. So it is now the world's most popular anime, and that's quite a feat. I was looking online at how much some of these mangakai, I think is what they're called, or I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, please email us and just say Josh is wrong. But yeah, these writers of these mangas, like, they are, their properties are making bank. Like, it's crazy how in 2024 just how popular anime has become. Because I remember back in the 90s, right, they had four or five popular ones. There's Dragon Ball, Naruto, Outlaw Star, Akira, things like that. But now there's hundreds, thousands of anime shows out there for people to watch. And to have this one show climb above all of that content is such an amazing feat.
It is. And if you still tell me, my friend, I still think Akira above all else when it comes to anime, but I'm getting more into anime, you know, in the recent years and recent times. I know when we first started the show, I was like, okay, after Akira, I wasn't watching anything else, but I have gotten more into anime, especially with my daughter, my youngest daughter, who has gotten more into anime. Demon Slayer, to give you an example, we've gotten heavily invested in that. I've told you we went to go see the latest film at the movie place as far as what if came out for season whatever. I don't know. They don't call it by numbers. They call it by location, wherever the latest season of Demon Slayer is. So, yeah, definitely getting more into it, and we'll see, but still stops and starts with Akira for me. I don't think you can get any better than that.
Well, so it's funny when I'm, you know, doing conventions and stuff, people see some of the Funko Pops. They say the gateway for them was either Akira, Trigun, or Dragon Ball. And I think that a lot of people's genesis in this type of fandom does start with those three, because they are the most popular and the most well done animes of all time.
I agree, my friend. So we'll definitely go ahead and keep our eye on Jujutsu Kaisen. Just how big can it get? Even bigger than the best? We'll go ahead and congratulate Jujutsu Kaisen for earning the spot as the most popular anime of all time, or at least recognized by the Guinness Book of World Records. So congratulations to that. But if there's an anime that you want us to cover on this show, please let us know. Please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
If you're tired of sifting through flea markets for rare and unique games, we can help. Retro City Games in Henderson, Nevada, only 5 minutes from the Las Vegas Strip, has all your favorite gaming staples, classics, and a wide selection of rare games with new stuff always appearing on our shelves. Come in and chat with Nicole or Doug about your love of games and watch as they help you complete your collection or find your childhood favorite. And don't forget, Retro City Games loves trade-ins. So if you have any Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega, Xbox, PlayStation, or even PC games, come in and visit Retro City Games today. Welcome to the new metropolis of gaming, Retro City Games.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmos Show and the PCC Multiverse. So you had watched The Tomorrow War before The Matrix?
Yes.
If you forced me down, I was tied into a chair and I had to watch one thing, I would say The Matrix Resurrections.
Really? Funny.
Yeah, because of all the cutscenes, I could remember what a good movie was like.
Well played, sir. Well played.
Yes, that's the only reason for the flashbacks, to remind you what a good Matrix movie was. That's the Pop Culture Cosmos Show.
And the PCC Multiverse.
Catch our shows on Worldwide Radio 7 days a week and wherever you get your podcasts. Well, my friend, before we head on out, it is time now to face the franchise. And wondering, I think, for a couple days on what exactly we would choose for facing the franchise. But all of a sudden, a little story came out on the trades about reporting that the latest news is on The Matrix, that a fifth Matrix movie is in production. It is going to be written, starting on that. It's been announced. It's getting a fifth movie. There will not be a Wachowski directing. Lana Wachowski, who directed by herself the last one, is going to be only listed as an executive producer. That means that both Wachowskis that were involved in the first three attempts at The Matrix are no longer going to be a big, huge part of it. But it is going back to the world of Matrix. But the thing is, my friend, I still throw the response to the last Matrix movie that both Melinda and I had on it, The Matrix Resurrections. I still use that as a punchline, my friend, on how bad that movie was. That movie was bad. No, that movie was bad. No, that movie was bad, The Matrix Resurrections. And I said it was so bad, Josh, that it used, during the course of the movie, flashbacks from the original Matrix, just to remind you just how good that movie was and how bad The Matrix Resurrections is now. So after a debacle of massive proportions by WB on that one, and the fact that it was a miserable failure at the box office, you think that would have killed the Matrix franchise. You think finally it would have been de-risked. You think finally it would have been evaporated. But no, no. Somebody has an idea to revive the Matrix back to life. The thing is Keanu, is Carrie Ann Moss, and is there a return in order of Lawrence Fishburne? Are any of these great parts of the Matrix from years gone by going to be involved? Your thoughts on facing the franchise before we go into the other aspects of it, as far as the early movies and whatnot. Facing the franchise, my friend, your thoughts on a fifth Matrix?
My thoughts are why. Yeah, I look at it, you're right. Resurrections was a completely awful film. And what made the first, I guess, arguably the first three, the first one was absolutely amazing. But what made the first three films so revolutionary and interesting was not so much the characters, because it didn't really have a lot of character development. It had Neo was, you know, developing into the leader, the man that he needed to be, but that happened really quick. What was so intriguing about it was the world building that the Wachowskis did for for the Matrix, everything, like the doors, the Keymaster, the Sentinels, and what all that good stuff. Like, that's what made those films so interesting. So when we got to Resurrections, it really took a story that was done and took it nowhere. So when I heard that there was a new one coming out, I sat there thinking to myself, like, why? What is the story? What story is going to be told here? And they've told their story. Their characters had a seemingly, I guess, according to them, happy conclusion in the end of that one. So is this going to be a reboot? Is it going to be tell a story of a new generation of characters? Is there going to be something happening, like artificial intelligence is going to, you know, it's going to be a play on artificial intelligence? And the only thing I can think of is that somebody outside of the Wachowskis went to Warner Brothers and said, like, hey, I have an amazing idea for a new Matrix film that is going to totally reinvigorate this franchise for the next 20 years. And they're like, all right, here's some money.
That has to have been the best pitch ever. I'm just telling you right now, Josh, it had to have been the best pitch ever. I want to see, get the guy's name that is going to be involved in it, as far as the Drew Goddard, who's worked on everything from The Martian to The Good Place. He will write and direct the new film. So I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall at Warner Brothers, my friend, in the offices, in the executive suites, him going up and doing the hard pitch. Whatever he said, my gosh, can you not say it for a Mass Effect?
Daredevil.
Can you not? Mass Effect.
Yeah.
He did Daredevil?
That's right. Yeah, he was the creator of Netflix's Daredevil.
Well, there you go. So he has a history of good stuff. The Good Place, which is a very well and much beloved. The Martian, which, you know, whether or not you like The Martian over Interstellar, Interstellar over The Martian, they both featured, you know, Matthew Damon. So go ahead and whatever Matt Damon you like better, go ahead and say it there. But because they both came around at the same time. But I will say again, whatever pitch he made, please copy and paste that, somebody out there, to pitch the same thing about Mass Effect. It must have been golden, whatever he said, because my God, after the, you know, it's not like it's like a long time ago it happened, Josh. This happened, yeah, people could say COVID and whatnot, but man, this movie sucked on its own as far as the resurrection is concerned. So whatever he said must have just really been pleasant to the ears of WB. And I want to go back before we head on out as far as facing the franchise, go back to what really made it work. The Matrix, my friend, It started going off the rails with Reloaded and Revolutions. I think the more it got into trying to talk, I think it really talked people out of existence. That's why people were just done with it back in 2003 when Revolutions came out. But your thoughts on the early movies, the early hit that was The Matrix, and then the Reloaded Revolution saga that came thereafter? Because remember, both of those movies were released that same year, Reloaded and Revolutions.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, The Matrix 1 was great. Like, I remember being a kid and seeing the trailers for that, and then actually finally getting a chance to watch it on VHS of all things. And I was totally on board for that world, because then remember, like, the Animatrix came out, kind of gave a little more backstory of how things got to the point where they did. And yeah, the lore definitely was there. It was there. They had everything they needed for an incredibly interesting world. But then,
I mean, Enter the Matrix, the video game, that sold a ton before people realized the game kind of blew chunks. But
yeah, so with the Reloaded and like
Matrix Online, remember that MMORPG?
Yeah, how could I forget that one? Reloaded was visually pleasing, but it was a narrative mess, you know. And I think from like halfway through Reloaded all the way to the end of Revolutions, pardon the phrasing, but I think the story kind of crawled up its own butt, you know, and it didn't really know like what. It was just going in circles. Like, it didn't know what it was trying to say until it finally said it in the end of Revolutions. And everyone from even to this day will go back and watch those movies again and be like, oh, what?
The more exposition they did, the worse it became. It's almost like digging your own, you know, actually, because remember, you saw in that final battle, as far as in what you thought was the final one, the Revolutions, where mm-hmm. he's battling all the Mr. Smiths, but you saw that big crater that they were making at the end. It is just like that as far as the movies themselves, because the more they tried the exposition, the more exposition they did, the more they dug their own hole, my friend, and really made it a mess, because people just were like, this is just way over my head. We talked about Three Body Problem. We talked about Star Trek sometimes having that ability to talk so much and explain so much, it just goes over the audience head. Mm-hmm. This time, that is a classic example of just, you know, when the creator and Neo start going on talking to each other and having this long conversation. It's just like, you lost us. You lost us all. You lost the audience then. And I'm just surprised you would ever think that you could get them back.
Yeah, there's a lot of like religious metaphors in those movies, but they don't do a good job of explaining them. You know, it's a really weird, I don't know. It's like, I look at the narrative threads of this one. It's just a big knot, like the Christmas lights from Christmas Vacation. And I don't know, man. Like, I one day I want to go back and watch those movies, but I remember like watching them over and over again, trying to understand what story was being told. And I still don't get it. One thing great that did come out of it, though, was that, remember the MTV spoof that's in it's in the special features of the DVD. And you could see, was it Stifler? And no, yeah, it was The Matrix Reloaded. It had Andy Dick. And then it had, what's his name? Stifler from American Pie and Justin Timberlake. So that was funny. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm curious to see with The Matrix 5 or whatever it is, you know, how are they going to make it appeal to a modern audience? Because like these days, much like we've discovered with Blade Runner, right, with properties done so long ago, how are they going to make this generation interested in that? So how are they going to simplify it for a new generation of fans?
Because we talked about 2049, absolutely fantastic movie. And depending on who you talk to, maybe, you know, Denis Villeneuve's best film.
Right.
But yet it did do very well at the box office. And it was a money loser at the box office, and maybe has only made its money back throughout the years because it has done so well on Blu-ray and DVD. But that being said, you can't depend on that. And if you're talking about a Matrix, the thing was, like, you've got this property away from that. And I tell you all the time, and you tell me all the time, that there's Hollywood looks for nothing original. They always want to go with either an adaptive property or something that they made or created a long time ago because they think it's the cheaper or the safer way out. And it's not always the case, but with the Matrix, you saw in 2021, a new audience wasn't getting into Keanu Reeves and Carrie-Anne Moss coming back one more time because of just the way the bad storytelling and just the fact the way it was poorly promoted, poorly dealt with, and just absolutely just nobody was excited for it. So whoever or whatever Drew Goddard is basing this off of for the next Matrix, God help you, my friend, because you're going to need a lot of it.
Because this is literally a property that's dead in the water. Like, mm-hmm. It's, you can't do anything. It's like that, what's that meme where they're, you know, poking the horse with a stick? Like, you literally cannot do anything with it from here. So, you know, good luck and Godspeed.
What are your thoughts out there on a new Matrix? Because we faced the franchise on the Matrix. What are your thoughts on a Matrix number 5? Are you excited, interested, intrigued, or you just don't care? Please let us know your thoughts on a new Matrix, Pop Culture Cosmos, or your thoughts as well on the Matrix as a whole, the series as a franchise, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com. Well, my friend, it's been a fantastic episode, but before we head on out, you have to give us the details on what's going on with your awesome, awesome experience known as the Happy Hoarder Collectibles.
You know, I wish I had some like exciting things to say, but I don't right now because I'm still just trying to get that website up and running. We're trying to recover from some things that happened earlier on in the year, but you know, things are going in the right direction. We are going to be doing a convention here in a couple weeks, and keep on, you know, paying attention to our social media pages, and we'll be getting some new Funko Pops in, and the website will be up and working here soon, and hopefully things will be good. Yeah.
Do you, by the way, were you the buyer for the Action number 1 comic that sold, which is the origination of Superman? Were you the buyer of the, you know, the actual comic that sold for $6 million?
I was not the buyer, but I definitely wish I was the seller because, I mean, $6 million would be amazing right now.
Rated at 8.5, so it's one of the best conditioned of the, 200,000 that were distributed back in the day, believed to be disrepair. There's probably less than 100 in existence. And this was one of the best conditioned ones, and it earned over $6 million. Heck, Josh, one that was rated at a 0.5 got over $500,000.
Yeah, I mean, that's a piece of history right there, though. It's, and you know, back then, how would you have known that these comic books would be worth that much? So, my recommendation to literally anybody out there, like if you have a comic book you think is going to be great, then definitely get it graded because it's worth the. It's worth the time and the money to do so because you give another, 20 years and you might be sitting on something good.
We'll see what happens, my friend. But it is, of course, Action Comics number 1, the original storytelling of Superman. It actually just beat the original, comic book for Spider-Man. I think that was the record holder, like 3 and some odd million. Yeah.
Fantasy, yeah.
Yeah, so that is now the number 1 most valued comic on the planet is Action Comics number 1. So there you go, $6 million, and it's yours right there for you, Action Comics. But my friend, it's been a great episode today. Any last thoughts before we head on out?
No, not that I know of. I think that in June that we should absolutely do like a halfway check mark or checkpoint for the year of like movies and shows that we've watched to kind of give people a chance to like catch up on things, you know, they got summer, all that stuff coming up. So I don't know, I think we should do it, definitely.
Excellent. That's why I keep you around, my friend. No, I'm just kidding, my friend. I'm just kidding. Yes, that is absolutely a great idea, my friend, and that's absolutely what we should do. Definitely looking forward to it. So yes, definitely should get you up to speed on the best of pop culture halfway through when it comes to June. Just remind me, my friend, and we'll go ahead and do just that right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. So for Josh Peterson, this is Gerald Glassford. It's another beautiful day in paradise right here in the Pop Culture Cosmos. We thank you for listening. And here's hoping you have yourself a great